Louise Fryer.
As thoughts turn from London 2012 to the Olympics in Rio in 4 years' time, it seems the perfect moment for the Royal Albert Hall to welcome an orchestra from Brazil. The São Paulo Symphony Orchestra making their debut at the proms, the baton change from the UK to Brazil, smoothed by the presence of their new principal conductor, Marin Alsop. She's appeared at the proms many times with the Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra and others, and although a native New Yorker, she feels like an honorary Brit. But it's music from the Americas, both North and South, that form tonight's programme. Brazilian-born pianist Nelson Freire plays Momo Precoce by Villa-Lobos, and the concert ends with the Estancia Suite, taken from the gaucho-inspired ballet by the Argentine composer Ginastera. Heading north, Aaron Copland's Fanfare for the Common Man is mirrored by the Fanfare for an Uncommon Woman by Joan Tower, dedicated to tonight's conductor. And to begin, one of Dvořák's best-loved works that incorporates references to spirituals and Native American folk music in the symphony he wrote shortly after arriving in America in September 1892, his ninth symphony that he subtitled From the New World. All that applause greets the arrival of the leader of the São Paulo Symphony Orchestra, Emanuele Baldini. Dvořák had been invited by a Mrs. Jeanette M. Thurber, the wife of a wealthy grocer, to head the newly established National Conservatory, which he'd founded in New York. But he wasn't really at home in the big city. He disliked the traffic and the noise and hankered after the quiet of the bohemian countryside. That sense of nostalgia evident in the Ninth Symphony. And although he found much to admire in the music of his new home, the American connections of the symphony might have been exaggerated. Suggestions that it quotes specific spirituals, references to Longfellow's Hiawatha, and that it represented the beginning of a national American school have been soundly refuted, not least by Dvořák himself. He declared it genuine bohemian music, and it's become one of the most popular pieces in the repertoire. And here to conduct it comes Marin Alsop, taking her place in front of the São Paulo Symphony Orchestra, making their debut in tonight's prom. This is Dvořák's Symphony No. 9 in E minor from the New World.
Thank you.
São Paulo Symphony Orchestra making their debut at the Proms, conducted by Marin Alsop in Dvorak's Ninth Symphony. And at its premiere in Carnegie Hall in 1893, the symphony was instantly a triumph. Dvorak reporting to his publisher, "The papers say no composer has ever had such a success. The people applauded so much, I had to thank them from my box like a king." A pretty riotous reception to tonight's performance. Marin Alsop coming back onto the stage and bringing to his feet the core Anglais player, Nathan Albuquerque, and the leader of the orchestra, Emanuele Baldini, and the first cello, and then bringing all of the players to a standing position. The piece has had a long Brahms history, performed here first in 1896, just 3 years after its US premiere. The Czech Philharmonic and various Czech conductors have incorporated it into evenings of bohemian music, so it's fascinating to hear it handled by musicians steeped in the culture of the Americas. Lots of people absolutely fascinated. The hall completely packed this evening, and there's really no room in the arena at all. People standing shoulder to shoulder, giving this fantastic response. Marin Alsop coming back once more, refusing to go to the front without all her players standing first. Very excited to be conducting this orchestra. We're going to be hearing a little bit more about that shortly. And Dvorak told an interviewer he believed the future music of America must be founded on spirituals, the beautiful and varied themes that are the product of the soil. They are America. And the São Paulo Symphony Orchestra will be leaving us in no doubt as to the riotous and colourful nature of the national music of various parts of South America in the second part of this prom, in works by Villa-Lobos and Ginastera, introduced by a couple of North American fanfares for the common man and the uncommon woman. But first, Proms Plus, recorded earlier this evening, focused on tonight's orchestra. It was introduced by Petrok Trelawney.
Welcome to Proms Plus. As we languish, laid low with post-Olympic blues, the doubts and excitements that London's been through for the past few years are now handed on to Rio. And Brazil has the World Cup football to host before the next game, so there's no doubt we'll all be seeing much more of Brazil's green flag, with its yellow rhombus and blue globe inscribed with the nation's motto, Order and Progress. There may even be a few of those flags across the road this evening as the first ever Brazilian orchestra to perform at the Proms makes its debut. The fact that seats sold out early, indicative of the excitement around this evening's appearance by the Sao Paulo Symphony Orchestra. Well, tonight's Proms Plus explores the orchestra and the city it calls home. I'm joined here at the Royal College of Music by Marcelo Lopez, who is a former trumpeter in the orchestra for 21 years, but for the past 7 years has been its executive director, Kathy Graham, who's director of music at the British Council, and Marin Alsop, the Sao Paulo Symphony Orchestra's new principal conductor. Please welcome them all. Marin, let me start with you. You've had a career which has encompassed big orchestras in Europe, in the United States. South America has often been dismissed as a musical backwater. What made you take this job?
Well, I think I shared that rather narrow view as well of South America, and it was Tim Walker, who is in charge of the LPO, who was consulting with the Sao Paulo Symphony, and he twisted my arm in a very long car journey, and he wouldn't let me out until I agreed to go and guest conduct for a week. And really, I was amazed, surprised, and I don't even have any adjectives. I had no expectations, really. And arriving to one of the most beautiful concert halls in the world in Sao Paulo, and hearing an orchestra of this quality and potential and enthusiasm and hunger to be great. So all of my stereotypic preconceptions just went out the window, and I really started seriously thinking about spending time with this orchestra, because it just feels like a land of opportunity, and the landscape is just ripe to make great art.
And Marcelo, this is an orchestra with big ambitions. The motto of the city of Sao Paulo is, "I am not led, I lead." That could apply to the orchestra as well.
Yes, the orchestra has this ambition of being one of the greatest orchestras of the world. We've been working hard, and I think Marin is a big asset we have to make it happen for the future. I think she's the right person for that society. Sao Paulo is a very complex society. It's a real melting pot, but there's this hungry to do big things to make it happen in the best way. And the orchestra, I think, has been an icon of Sao Paulo progress in the last 2 years in the cultural side of the development. So I think we are in the right path in this sense.
And Kathy, here's an orchestra in an enormous city, in the midst of an enormous country, a country with innate musical passion, as you put it, the ability to make music out of a matchbox.
I think that's true. I've been in Brazil, in Sao Paulo, twice now, once for 24 hours in 2007, and then for 10 days in 2009. And the first thing I learned in 2007 was exactly that we Brazilians make music out of a matchbox. And the one thing as an outsider that I've always felt is that there is music everywhere, that Brazilians have music as part of their DNA. Especially the grassroots level, there's an awful lot of fantastic music making everywhere. And I've never felt the really hard and fast division between so-called art music and more popular forms of music. There's always been a great comfort in crossover, and both forms seem to be respected and loved just as much.
Well, let's start by looking at the history of the orchestra. Marcelo, give us a brief portrait of its past. It was founded in the mid-1950s.
Yes, the orchestra was founded in 1954, and then it had some ups and downs. And in 1973, came back to Brazil Maestro Eleazar de Carvalho, which was, I think, the greatest conductor of the country. In all times, he was assistant, he was director of Tanglewood, he directed so many orchestras around the world. I think he conducted all the big orchestras in the world. Then he came back to Brazil and he developed the orchestra again. And for 20 years, we had a very good time with him. Of course, there are always problems in the economic side of the orchestra in that time. And then the orchestra had some problems. In 1997, came Maestro John Aschling, who remade the orchestra, big reformation. We had this amazing hall built for the orchestra in 1999, and then we have a very good started some good relations with labels and started some tours in Europe, in the United States. And briefly saying, we had married now for this new era of the orchestra. But between Nächeling's departure and Marin's arrival, we had Mr. Jean-Pascal Tourtellier, which was very good for the orchestra also. He was principal conductor interim for 3 years. So I think that's roughly the history of the orchestra.
Now, you talked about this wonderful concert hall. For anyone who hasn't seen this concert hall, go straight away to the internet and Google it, because it is stunning. It's actually part of a railway station.
Yes, it's still a railway station. There are people who come by train on Sunday morning concerts. So what do you do? Free concerts. We do lots of free concerts on Sunday mornings, and they still come for the concert by train. But it was the courtyard of the railway station.
The Winter Garden.
The Winter Garden, yeah. And in fact, the building was the offices of the railway station. And it was transformed. In fact, he was there. It was there since he was built. Nobody saw it before. And then there was no ceiling, of course. We put a ceiling, which is a movable ceiling with 15 wooden panels that can be adjusted. The acoustic can be adjusted for the type of music you do. For Baroque music, you can put a little bit down and you have more volume. And if you're going to make, for example, a Bruckner symphony, you can make it a cathedral. So it's very interesting. So Google and see it. You're going to see that it's very nice.
And Marin, despite the fact that it was sitting there without a roof, in fact, put a roof on, it's the perfect shape for a concert hall.
Oh, it's absolutely beautiful. I mean, you have to check it out online, and we're in the process.
Or come to Brazil and see it for yourself.
Oh, please, yes, come to Sao Paulo if you prefer. That's
the best way.
But if you don't have the money immediately to look online, it's aesthetically lovely, you know, because it has great character. There, you know, you see the touches from the old coffee exchange building, the mosaics, the stained glass. They've left all of these beautiful hallmarks intact. And then Russell Johnson is responsible for the acoustics, and it's lots and lots of wood inside the concert hall. And it's also the perfect size. It's about 1,500 seats, depending. Yeah, and so it's really, really absolutely stunning. Everybody loves it.
What were your first impressions when you arrived in Sao Paulo to conduct for the first time of the city? Because it's a huge, sprawling metropolis.
I was reminiscing about that car ride with Tim Walker, not very fondly, because the city is, it's hard work. It's pretty off-putting. But then, of course, all the people that live in Sao Paulo inform me that they live in Sao Paulo so that they can get to Rio quickly. So then you start to understand. But, you know, it's one of those situations that, you know, the city is not, it's not a beautiful city on first impression, and there's a lot of graffiti, a lot of concrete, so it's pretty off-putting. But I've started learning that it's a city whose beauty is internal. And there are a lot of hidden beauties. There are some stunning museums, you know, some beautiful interiors once you get inside. And it's not about the edifices, except the concert hall, of course, but it's more about the people that live there. And they're the most engaged and passionate and warm. There's lots of hugging goes on, and for we Americans, that's a little alarming, but I'm getting used to it. And I think it really is about a spirit rather than about a facade.
Kathy, is that the impression you had too?
I was just thinking, we had four young singers from a school in Sao Paulo as part of Youth Music Voices, the crack choir that sang at the Olympics, the Cultural Olympiad. And apparently the 90-odd UK youngsters just loved having them there, because they said they changed the whole dynamic of the social events, because they were so warm and so extrovert, and they just loved having them around. So I recognise this very well.
It is, Marcelo, a city of great contrasts, a city with people living in incredibly rich areas, cheek by jowl, with areas of great poverty. How does the orchestra try and draw a broader community into the concert halls, other than just the rich people?
Yes, we have very interesting programs for children in our orchestra. We bring more than 100,000 children from public schools to the hall every year. When they have the opportunity to have the first impressions and experience with classical music, and it is very enhancing. I think 62% of our audience don't pay one penny for the concerts every year. Last year, I think we brought more than 300,000 people for our hall, and 62% of those people didn't pay. So it's there are lots of opportunities to enjoy classical music in
our
hall.
That's an amazing statistic, 62.
Yeah, 62%, which is a lot. But our subscription is going very well also. It's very, very well sold, more for the middle classes. But I think that money pays for the projects we have for the children and for the teachers of the public school also, because we train the teachers of public schools to music perception, music appreciation, so they can give good ideas for their students before they come to the concert. So that's the way the orchestra does social work.
There's also a very broad El Sistema-like program, particularly based in Sao Paulo, that is supported by the government. And this is resulting in a lot more young people having serious and sophisticated exposure to symphonic music, classical music. And the orchestra has an academy for 20 young emerging musicians, and they come and work with members of the orchestra. They're actually supported to often go on and go to conservatories around the world. And the orchestra just took on the running of a winter festival in July. That's something else to get used to. But it was great. I went from Baltimore, it was 108 degrees, to the mountains in outside of Sao Paulo, where it was half that temperature, so it was perfect. We had this year an orchestra of almost 100 kids. There were actually several musicians from this institution who were invited, and young musicians from various international conservatories, as well as many, many Brazilian kids. So the orchestra is starting to lead the way in terms of pedagogy and trying to nurture and mentor the next generations. And I think that's what it's all about, because we have to, as you say, supply the teachers of the future, but also provide opportunity for today.
And do you feel, therefore, that the orchestra is really rooted in the community of the city?
Well, I think it is. You know, I think the city is more challenging than most cities, though, and I don't want to, you know, paint a simplistic picture of it. It's a very complex society, and a dramatically changing society, rapidly changing society, that we have to keep adapting to, it's changing daily almost, so we have to keep up with it and try to serve the needs while preserving what we do and not trying to be what we can't be. So it's complex, I think.
Marcella, you mentioned the fact that 62% of tickets are free to the people who have them. Someone's got to pay for them. How does the funding of the orchestra work?
Well, the funding of the orchestra comes 62%, 65% from the government of São Paulo. And then in the rest we get from sponsorships, ticket sales, and the typical revenues that an orchestra can have. When I say that 62% of people don't pay for concerts, I have to say also that we don't do that alone. There are so many youth orchestras and not professional or semi-professional orchestras in São Paulo. What we do, we have a kind of a contract with them, with those orchestras, so they help us, they do some concerts for us, and we give back to them some gala concerts nights in our hall, so they don't have to pay for the hall, They have their own series in our hall, and then they do some pedagogical or educational concerts for the orchestra, for our organization, for the foundation. So it's a kind of exchange, which is a win-win game for everybody, and we keep those orchestras also busy, and they have some significance in the city. So it's a very complex but good setup for that situation.
In this country, we complain all the time about, the Arts Council are cutting the budget, or the government's cutting the budget for this. Is it easy to get the money
from the government?
Yeah.
It's never easy to say to get the money from the government, but I think the orchestra has the orchestra is the most important project from the Secretary of Culture in São Paulo, and what we have to do. We have some goals that we have to achieve for them. Give some number of concerts, so we have to publish Brazilian music, commission pieces for Brazilian composers. So we have several goals to achieve every year, and when we achieve them, those points, those goals, we are eligible to have more support.
Kathy?
I was just going to say, it sounds remarkably similar to the way it works here, so I think there are a lot of similarities.
One thing, though, that's unique, which is that instead of being a victim of a change in political regime, the way the funding works, they've structured it so that it works across changeovers in government, so that what happens is that the funding crosses the presidential election by a couple of years, so that it can't become... I mean, one of the things that is alarming me very much in Europe is that watching some governments change and then suddenly come in and cut all of the arts by 60% because it becomes a political football.
Let's talk about the makeup of the orchestra, Marin, in terms of its players, who are, I think, more than two-thirds Brazilian. Marcelo was telling me earlier on there's a one-soul Brit who's an oboist, is that right?
He's an oboe player, yeah.
One oboe player from Britain who's delighted to be back here at the Royal Albert Hall just for this brief visit. But because of the level of music education in Brazil, a lot of the players have gone abroad to conservatories in America, in Europe. Does that mean that the orchestra might lack sort of unified sound that sometimes we expect from European or North American orchestras?
No, I mean, I think in today's climate of globalization, I don't think, you know, very few orchestras really project a monochromatic, you know, vision of sound. And I think the more diversity you have, the more potential you have to create a broader landscape, broader palette in what you do. So I think having, I mean, the vast majority of players are Brazilian, and they bring a multitude of experiences to the table. So I think it plays well to the country, this sense of melting pot. You know, there isn't the same kind of delineation in America, you know, where we all say, well, I'm Irish-American, and then, you know, well, you're African-American, you're Chinese-American. And in Brazil, everyone's Brazilian. You know, this is it's a different kind of embrace and ownership of belonging. And I feel that in the orchestra as well, that regardless of where you originated or where you studied, you know, we're all part of this incredible orchestra.
So what are you setting out to do musically to move the orchestra up in terms of its international reputation?
Well, I mean, my goals are the same, whether I'm with the Bournemouth Symphony or in Sao Paulo, which is to try to bring the best out of the musicians and create a working environment that's incredibly productive but also demanding, and raise the artistic and technical level as high as I can, and give the orchestra a sense of happening. You know, every time we play a piece of music, that we're trying to capture the sound world and the intention of that composer. I don't really, people ask me about specific qualities about orchestras, but I think if you know an orchestra, I mean, I'm thinking of the old days when you think about the Philadelphia Orchestra, the string sound, or Chicago brass, but I think that's very limiting, because then you have to have the same Philadelphia string sound whether you play Mozart or you play Mahler. I think a great orchestra today is an orchestra that sounds like the great Mahler orchestra when you're playing Mahler and a great Mozart orchestra when you're playing Mozart. So for me, it's all about versatility and trying to address any weaknesses. And I think it for every orchestra, you know, the challenge is always to be able to maximize your acoustic environment, be flexible, have incredible rhythmic integrity, shared rhythmic integrity, and a sense about the piece that you're performing together that brings you into that narrative that the composer intended. So, I mean, that's what I do wherever I go, and it feels the same. Having the opportunity tonight to debut here at the Prom is it feels really special, and it's nice to be with musicians who feel the, I think, the special quality of the evening. And I never saw so many musicians taking pictures at a rehearsal as today. It was great. And then the Brazilian flag was, you know, up on the digital display, and they were taking pictures of each other. It was really touching. I just wanted to share the secret with people that if you look really hard during the Ginastera, I've talked our executive director into playing with the orchestra one more time. So he'll be in the trumpet section, but don't tell anyone, okay? And it sounded good today, so yeah. I don't want to jinx him, though.
I hope I don't spoil the concert.
No, that'd be great.
Well, Marcelo, we better let you go and warm up, I think. Thank you very much indeed to all of my guests, Kathy Graham, Director of Music at the British Council, Marcelo Lopez, Executive Director of the Sao Paulo Symphony Orchestra, and Marin Alsop, the orchestra's new Chief Conductor. Thank you.
Thank you.
Tonight's Proms Plus was introduced by Petrop Trelawney. Well, welcome back to the Royal Albert Hall and this BBC prom that sees the São Paulo Symphony Orchestra making their proms debut under Marin Alsop. Latin American rhythms abound as Brazilian-born pianist Nelson Freire is the soloist in Momo Precoce by Villa-Lobos, capturing the colours and sounds of the children's carnival that runs alongside the Rio Mardi Gras. And then we're heading out into the Pampas for the Estancia Suite, taken from the ballet by Alberto Ginastera. You might like to think of it as the Argentine answer to Aaron Copland's Rodeo. And it's Copland's music that opens the second half of this prom, his well-known Fanfare for the Common Man, followed directly by the Fanfare for the Uncommon Woman, number one, by Joan Tower. It's the American composer's feminist response to Copland's piece, composed in 1986 and more recently dedicated to Marin Alsop, who's recorded it and four more fanfares by Joan Tower with the Colorado Symphony Orchestra. Well, at the moment, there's no members of the orchestra on stage. Just the brass and percussion are going to be coming on shortly to play these two opening fanfares for the second half. Joan Tower has gone on to compose four more fanfares following the first that we're going to hear. It was commissioned by the Houston Symphony Orchestra to mark the 150th anniversary of Texas in Texas's brief guise as an independent state. Well, that applause greets the brass players, the horn players, the trumpets, the trombones and tuba, and the percussion players. And Marin Alsop is also on stage to begin part two with Copland's Fanfare for the Common Man. Aaron Copeland's Fanfare for the Common Man, swiftly answered by that Fanfare for the Uncommon Woman, number one by Joan Tower, dedicated to the woman conducting tonight's prom, Marin Alsop, principal conductor of the São Paulo Symphony Orchestra. Joan Tower's piece using the same scoring as Copeland's. As she started her career as a composer in the 1960s, she found herself adding a feminist twist. Well, from North to South America is where we're heading for the rest of tonight's prom. São Paulo is a bustling city, the biggest in the Southern Hemisphere and the Americas, and it was the birthplace of the man who joins the orchestra next, the pianist Nelson Freire. He gave his first public appearance when he was five, but his passport to international fame came when he won the Rio de Janeiro International Piano Competition in 1957 at the age of 12. The prom is here, greeting the arrival of the piano on stage here at the Royal Albert Hall. Well, it's the city of Rio that provides the inspiration for the music that Nelson Freire is going to play by the Brazilian composer Heitor Villa-Lobos. One of the fringe events surrounding the famous Rio Carnival is a children's carnival, and the colourful sights and sounds inspired Villa-Lobos to write a piano suite, Carnaval das Crianças Brasileiras, in 1919. 10 years later, he arranged it for piano and orchestra under the title Momo Precoce, Momo being king of the carnival, and Precoce meaning kids, which leaves the translation pretty much up to you as to whether it's Momo who's a child king or whether it's Momo's children we're celebrating. But either way, what Villa-Lobos presents are 8 vignettes featuring stock carnival characters amongst wider vistas that are throbbing with the hubbub of the festival. I asked a couple of players in the orchestra whether they'd been to the carnival themselves.
How can you not go to the carnival? Everyone should do it once in their life, at least. I've done it once and walking on the avenue, or participating in the actual carnival. The whole country just vibrates. There's a rhythm. And it seems like everybody, it's kind of the same rhythm, independently of what school they are. There are different words, but it's the same rhythm, and it goes on all day and all night. And it's very ecstatic feeling. And it seems like the whole city vibrates together, pulsates. You feel it even stronger than normally. It's really it's an amazing feeling. It's like ecstasy at 6 a.m.
I mean, it is really incredible. I mean, the colors, actually, as well as the rhythms, you know, hit you as you're watching the parades of the different, you know, displays and exhibitions going by. And I think that the music for sure captures that, as most of the Brazilian repertoire do. I have to admit, I've become quite a fan, even though our orchestra plays a lot of traditional repertoire, but the infusion of the Brazilian orchestral repertoire has been wonderful.
Violinist Anka Gavris and bass trombone Darren Milling. Well, the 8 sections of Momo Precoce are Piero's Little Horse, The Little Devil's Whip, Pierrette's Mood, volatile, as you might imagine, Little Domino's Bell, for which read Red Riding Hood and Maracas, and then the pace slows for the mysterious adventures of the little ragman. It picks up again for practical jokes by a little master, which is Till Eulenspiegel Brazilian style. There's a sweet and haunting melody from the little jester's shepherd's pipe before the piece culminates in the tumult of the children's procession. I thought I'd better explain that Momo is an important figure whose arrival at the carnival signifies that the fun is about to begin, and the role is usually given to a man of large physical size. There's a competition to choose him. He has to be good at dancing samba and have an ability to whip up the crowd. At this year's carnival in Rio, the mayor of the city, Eduardo Paes, who you'll have seen at the closing ceremony of the Olympics, gave King Momo the key to the city, an outsized golden key studded with gleaming diamante. Well, Momo originated in Greek mythology. He was the son of sleep and the night, who was expelled from Mount Olympus for being a bit of a joker and making fun of the other gods. Well, the members of the São Paulo Symphony Orchestra are on stage now, the piano lid raised and gleaming, waiting for the arrival of Nelson Freire. He's 67 years old. He has an acclaimed discography, including most recently a set of Chopin nocturnes and a live performance from Switzerland with Marta Argerich. That's been nominated for a Grammy. And he also has a new CD out chronicling 3 generations of Brazilian music. And here he comes, together with Marin Alsop, to take the solo piano part in Momo Precoce, by Heitor Villalobos.
Thank you.
Nelson Freire, the soloist with the São Paulo Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Marin Alsop, in Momo Precoce by the Brazilian composer Heitor Villa-Lobos. It's first Brahms performance here at the Royal Albert Hall this evening. Villa-Lobos died in 1959 before South American composers were really taken seriously in Britain. Happily now we're a little more open-minded, especially when Brazil has such musical ambassadors as are in evidence this evening. The members of the São Paulo Symphony Orchestra applauding Nelson Freire as he returns to the front of the platform. Marin Alsop greeted him with a warm embrace at the end of that performance. He's going to be playing with the orchestra again in Wiesbaden in just a couple of days' time, and then he's heading off to the piano festival at Roque d'Anterron in France. And coming onto the platform once again, this time with Marin Alsop. And she leads the applause. All the strings of the orchestra tapping their music desks, as Marin Alsop indicates, for various of the wind section to stand. Lots for the wind to do in that piece. That shades of Stravinsky at times. I thought sometimes the Shrovetide Fair at St. Petersburg, which features in Petrushka, sprang to mind as we were celebrating Shrovetide, the Mardi Gras in Rio. Well, to end tonight's prom, music by Alberto Ginastera, who's regarded as Argentina's most distinguished composer of the 20th century. He blazed a trail for subsequent composers from his home country to make their names internationally. Astor Piazzolla was a star pupil. Ginastera drew inspiration from native rhythms, dances and folk tunes of the Argentine, and especially from the lives and music of the gauchos, the cowboys of the Pampas, Argentina's wide-open plains. The orchestra is going to play the suite based on his muscular ballet of 1941, Estancia. It's music the São Paulo Symphony Orchestra are very much at home with and keen to show off to the wider musical world. I asked violinist Anka Gavris and trombonist Darren Milling whether, since Marin Alsop has taken over as their music director, the orchestra has changed.
Yes, I think it's changed in many ways, and it's continuing to change. There are some things that it will be a while, but I think she's going to change it for the better. Yeah, there is some kind of work that we needed, because the São Paulo Orchestra, one of the good points about it is very, very international, and there are very, very different schools of playing, even for the violins I'm speaking about, but in general, all the instruments too. And so for us, that's a talent, because it has its own sound, the São Paulo, which is a great sound, and I love it. It's very passionate, and everybody's we have a very, very individual way of playing, and somehow it just works. But we needed the kind of work that's more trying to be on the same level. And Marin is very, very good at doing that.
And I would just add that the arrival of Maestra Alsop is, you know, I've been in the orchestra for 14 years, actually. This is my 14th season, and I find that what's great about working with her is that she has an integrity. The way that she conducts in Europe or in the United States is the same way that she conducts in South America. Not always we have a resident conductor in that part of the world that maintains that stature, and she does all the time, 100% of the time, and I'm just really amazed and really glad to have her.
Anka Gavris and Darren Milling, seasoned musicians in a São Paulo Symphony Orchestra, reflecting on their new principal conductor. And clearly, that respect and warmth of feeling between players and conductor is mutual. Marin Alsop.
Everyone involved is a Renaissance person. They have many, many interests, many talents, from being published authors and experts in this. My executive director, he's actually going to play on the Ginastera tonight. He's second trumpet in the orchestra, but he's also a lawyer, and he is now a fantastic executive director. I mean, this is the kind of people they are. They're Renaissance people, as I said, and very engaged in being alive, which I think, for me, is rejuvenating. It's a wonderful experience. So I learn something from them every day.
And tell me about the Ginastera. Is it a piece that you knew before?
Well, the Estancia is a piece that I know. I haven't done it often, but a couple of times. And these are four dances from the entire suite. And each one has a programmatic context. So the first movement is called the, I think it translates into the agricultural workers, which sounds very banal, but it's got a lot of cross rhythms going on, lots of hemials, two against three, and you feel that vibrancy. The second movement is the lyrical moment in the piece, and it's called the wheat dance, which is a duet really between flute and the horns. And then the third movement is all about the cattle ranchers, and so Ginastera scores it in the depths of the orchestra, so it's the low horns and the low strings, and that's got a lot of cross rhythms, lots of sevens and fives. And then the last movement is Malambo, which is a dance, it's sort of like a dance-off always, you know, a dance contest, but it reminds me very much of the Tarantella, you know, where people go berserk from dancing, and that hopefully will stir up the crowd with this.
Does it give you the opportunity to really let your hair down?
Oh, yeah, it's a lot of fun. And they go wild, the orchestra. They just love it.
Marin Alsop. Well, members of the orchestra are coming onto the platform. Absolutely full now, every seat occupied. Ginastera's ballet, Estancia, was a 30-minute one-actor. It was composed originally for Lincoln Kirstein's American ballet Caravan, who were touring Latin America just before the start of the war. One of the company's best-known commissions was Copland's Billy the Kid. Ginastera's ballet was composed before Copland's other cowboy ballet, Rodeo, and it shares a similar story. Ginastera took as his source an epic poem by José Fernández that traces a city boy's efforts to win the affections of a country girl by proving himself as a rancher. Well, in the event, American Ballet Caravan didn't survive long enough to perform Ginastera's ballet, and it had to wait another decade for its premiere. So Ginastera sensibly used the music to create this concert hall suite. And just to remind you, the four movements are the Farm Labourers, Morning Dance of the Wheat, the Cattlemen of the Hacienda, and Malambo. And it's some of South America's most exciting music. Again, it's been compared to early Stravinsky. It's certainly raw and exciting. Incidentally, if you'd like to watch this prom, the cameras are in evidence here at the hall tonight. It's going to be broadcast on Saturday night at 8 o'clock over on BBC Two. And that applause greets the arrival of Marin Alsop, bringing the members of the San Paolo Symphony Orchestra to their feet and shaking hands with their leader, Emanuele Baldini, before turning to conduct the Estancia Suite by Alberto Ginastera. ending with a flourish, Marin Alsop and the San Paolo Symphony Orchestra in the Estancia Suite from the ballet by Alberto Ginastera, a piece inspired by the lives of gauchos on the Pampas. The diminutive figure of Marin Alsop leaping into the air at various times as she was conducting that piece. She's now back and encouraging the principal wind players to stand, and the brass. Once again, a full row of brass and the percussion players. The rest of the wind. And picking out next the keyboard player and the strings. And just listen to that reception here at the Royal Albert Hall. The orchestra making their debut here this evening and being greeted with at least one Brazilian flag being waved in the arena. Marin Alsop, MD of the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra in 2007, longtime principal conductor of the Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra, now their conductor emeritus. She won the Royal Philharmonic Society Conductor of the Year Award in 2002, and in 2006 received the Radio 3 Listeners Award. And listen to her reception here this evening as principal conductor of the São Paulo Symphony Orchestra.
Amigos do Brasil, aquele abraço. We have a special encore for you tonight from the northeast of Brazil. It's a dance called a frevo. This one's by Edu Lobo. I hope you enjoy it. Thank you. Thank you.
Rei de Vento, Gust of Wind, the third movement of the Suite Popular Brasileira by Edu Lobo. One of the things that has really endeared Marin Alsop to this orchestra is her enthusiastic attempts to speak Portuguese. She started learning almost as soon as she arrived, and the players are telling me just how impressed they've been by that. Well, Marin Alsop quick to bring to their feet Alexandre Silverio and José Arion Linares, the bassoon players and the clarinetist Ovanir Boosi, who stood up for their solos. And I think the audience here at the Royal Albert Hall want to hear more. Marin Alsop coming back onto the platform, encouraging all of the players to stand. And patting shoulders of the leader, Emanuele Baldini. Quite some debut for the orchestra. They're off on a mini European tour. They're going to be performing at Aldra, at Wiesbaden, and at the Concertgebouw in Amsterdam before heading back across the Atlantic. But that's where we leave them this evening. So it's back now to Broadcasting House.
Louise, thank you. Louise Fryer there at the Royal Albert Hall. And ways of hearing that prom again include the iPlayer online for the next 7 days. There'll also be a chance to hear the prom broadcast again here on Radio 3 on Thursday, the 30th of August at 2 in the afternoon. Well, tomorrow night live at the Hall is Vaughan Williams Night, the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra with conductor Andrew Manzi in three Vaughan Williams symphonies, his fourth, fifth and sixth, music that chronicles our national life in the troubled times of the 1930s and 40s. And during the prom's interval, composer Anthony Payne presents an anthology of unexpected readings about Ralph Vaughan Williams, including letters, private papers and reviews. That's tomorrow night's prom, live from the Royal Albert Hall, here on BBC Radio 3, starting at 7:30. As for Friday night...
Music is everywhere. You just have to have the ears to hear it. The words of John Cage, who was born 100 years ago. The BBC Proms marks Cage's centenary with music played from every corner of the Royal Albert Hall. Ilan Volkov curates and conducts an evening of John Cage at the BBC Proms. Live on Radio 3 this Friday night from 7:45.
Well, in the spotlight later on tonight, Percy Grainger. Aspects of Grainger is the subject of the essay this week in the Radio 3 Evenings. And tonight, Penelope Thwaites, pianist, writer on music and editor of the new Percy Grainger Companion, looks at Grainger the Man. That's the essay here on BBC Radio 3 at 10:45 tonight. Before it, at 10:15, Spanish Song. The composers are Mompou and Granados from Radio 3 new generation artist Clara Muriz. And right now, back to the Brazilian Villa-Lobos. Villa-Lobos mixing Bach-like idioms with Brazilian ones. This is the ninth and last of his Bachianas Brasileiras, what Villa-Lobos called an orchestra of voices for this, the music from 1945. He later made a version for string orchestra, and that's how the piece is usually played, but these are Villa-Lobos' original thoughts, to my ears, far more striking and probably a good deal more challenging too for the performers, that is. The chorus is divided in parts into eight parts, with a second movement that's a syncopated fugue, just for good measure, in an 11-beat rhythm. The brave souls singing it here, the BBC singers, conducted by Odalina de la Martinez. And it's the most Bach-like of the Bachianas Brasileiras, also one of the most abstract. No Brazilian bird calls, tropical forests or even local dances. But before that fugue, a brief prelude, in effect, a rhapsodic fantasy.
Thank you. La 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 la
Villa-Lobos, the ninth and last of his Bacchianas Brasileiras. Fascinating to hear a sung swung fugue written a couple of decades before Ward Swingle had a similar idea. That is to say, the rarely heard original version of the ninth Bacchianas Brasileiras. The performers there, the BBC singers, conducted by Odaline de la Martinez. Well, that music from 1945, to follow it, a Villa-Lobos piece from 1921 called simply Quartet. The scoring here, flute, alto sax, celesta, harp and female voices, though they don't appear until the middle movement of the three. The BBC singers and Odaline de la Martinez, joined here by members of the ensemble Lontano. a piece from 1921 by the Brazilian Heitor Villa-Lobos, and it's called Quatuor, the French word for quartet. The performers there, members of the group Lontano, with the BBC Singers. Well, the BBC Proms aren't the only live events here on Radio 3 at the moment. Jamie McDougall explains.
3 weeks of music on BBC Radio 3 from the Edinburgh International Festival. Every weekday morning at 11 o'clock, we'll be hearing from a stellar lineup of musicians, including Sir Thomas Allen, Nifova Adsnes, Rebecca Evans, John Williams and John Etheridge, Clay Williams and the Australian Chamber Orchestra. And on Friday, the violinist Leonidas Kavakos and the brilliant Russian pianist Nikolai Lugansky team up to bring us a recital of sonatas by Janáček, Brahms, Stravinsky and Respighi. Our week from Edinburgh continues live on Friday morning at 11 o'clock on BBC Radio 3.
And if you missed Sir Thomas Allen and Trio Zimmermann earlier on in the week, just a reminder, you can listen again in high-definition sound from the Radio 3 homepage. This is BBC Radio 3. It's a little after a quarter past ten. Time now for New Generation Artists with Clemency Burton-Hill.
Welcome to this latest BBC New Generation Artists programme, and the second featuring the glorious voice of mezzo-soprano Clara Murith. If you were listening a couple of weeks ago, you'll have heard Clara singing an afternoon of French songs. Today we're focusing on her native Spanish. Clara is with me in the studio today. Clara, how important is it for you to explore the Spanish song repertoire?
It is very important because they are probably the songs that I explore the best. It's how I learn to sing. So somehow I feel it very, very inside.
We're going to hear you singing Granados' Tonadillas. Are these songs that you've known for a long time? Have they been in your repertoire for years?
Somehow they are the kind of songs that you cannot recall when you listen to them for the first time. They have always been there somehow. I studied in Madrid, and this cycle, these tonadillas, describe very much that old Madrid from the beginning of last century. And it's very, very nice for me to be able to sing them.
For non-Spanish audiences, the works might not be quite so familiar. Certainly we don't hear as much Spanish song as we do, say, German Lieder. Tell us what we can expect.
Well, Granados is a composer that he established the Spanish art song, and somehow it's a Spanish answer to Lieder. And we can find all the Spanish harmonies and the piano, the Spanish piano, the sound of the guitar somehow, and lots of fire.
Now, the eight songs of Tonadillas are not exactly a song cycle, but they are linked in quite compelling ways. Can you tell us a little bit more about what the songs are about?
Well, they are very descriptive of certain situations. They are stories about majas and majos, that they are the young girls and the young men of Madrid. And they are somehow very close to painting as well. Granados was himself a very good painter and a big admirer of Goya. In fact, he owned some of his works. And some of the songs actually describe specific situations, imaginary situations with the painter, with Goya.
Now, we're going to hear you being accompanied by Joseph Middleton, the pianist who you've worked a lot with on your time on the BBC New Generation Artist scheme. But the last song we're going to hear from this selection, Maja Dolorosa, features Nicholas Daniel on the cor anglais. How did that come about?
Well, this song is very, very different to the other ones of the Tonadillas. It's very rarely performed with cor anglais. And we thought, Joseph and I, that it would be a fantastic opportunity to do it in this occasion. So we asked Nicolas to join us, and he was fantastic, and he said yes right away. And it has been a fantastic experience, because actually the description of this song is just a sudden encounter with death. It's a woman who finds her lover dead. And the way that this recording happened, it has been that sudden as well. We recorded in one track, and it was a fantastic encounter between the three of us, between Joseph, Nicolas and I, and somehow a little bit magical, a little bit surprising. And I hope that the recording kept a little bit of that surprise.
Well, let's hear a little bit of that magic, that surprise now. We'll have to wait until the eighth and final song from this selection to hear Nicholas Daniel's cor anglais. But before that, let's sit back and enjoy mezzo-soprano Clara Murith and pianist Joseph Middleton performing the selection of Granados' Tonadillas.
Thank you. Lo suelo en tu Porque hay